Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, June 24th, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Forest Service Director announces she'll scrap roadless rule. Protesters outside Spokane Federal Courthouse calling for release of Mexican national who has lived in the U.S. since before he was 2 years old and who runs construction business in Spokane. Feds delay money for a camp program, which pays for the sons and daughters of farm workers to go to college, impacting a number of colleges and universities in Washington. Moscow committee recommends conceptual plan for 1912 Center, third floor, and wellness for all fair. Ongoing at this hour in downtown Moscow, we'll have some interviews. That's all coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Facing opposition from U.S. Senators from Idaho and Montana, Republican U.S. Senator Mike Lee today announced he is modifying his plan to sell off up to 3 million acres of federal land in 11 western states. Lee had said he would insert the language into the budget reconciliation bill the Senate is expected to vote on soon. Lee said on X, formerly Twitter, this afternoon he is pulling all U.S. Forest Service land from his proposal and would limit the sale of Bureau of Land Management parcels to those within 5 miles of communities. Those involved in outdoor recreation and environmentalists have been contacting senators opposing the plan, and Republican Senators Mike Crapo and Jim Risch, both of Idaho, and Republican Senator Steve Daines of Montana all announced their opposition Friday. Boise-based hunting equipment supplier Brad Brooks, who is the CEO of Argali Corporation, said he helped organize opposition to Senator Lee's proposal. Brooks told the Lewiston Tribune website, "I think Mike Lee grossly miscalculated the public's response to this idea of selling public lands. I don't know what the repercussions are going to be for him, but a lot of people around the country, including his home state, are fired up enough that they are not going to go away anytime soon." A letter from leaders of recreation industry giants said outdoor recreation contributes $1.2 billion to the U.S. economy. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins said in a news conference yesterday he will revoke the U.S. Forest Service roadless rule, which protects undeveloped and unroaded areas of national forests from logging and road building. Rollins also issued a news release which said, once again, President Trump is removing absurd obstacles to common sense management of our natural resources by rescinding the overly restrictive roadless rule. This move opens a new era of consistency and sustainability for our nation's forests. It is abundantly clear that properly managing our forests preserves them from devastating fires and allows future generations of Americans to enjoy and reap the benefits of this great land. Trout Unlimited Executive Director Chris Wood, who was senior policy advisor to Michael Dombeck when Dombeck was Forest Service Chief, told the Lewiston Tribune he does not agree that the roadless rule is an obstacle to common sense management, and he does not think the rule is overly restrictive. Wood said, "I don't know that the timber industry is demanding to get into these backcountry areas. I don't know where the audience is to reopen this can of worms." Gifford Pinchot, the first chief of the Forest Service, famously defined conservation as the application of common sense to common problems for the common good. "My hope is if they do go through a public process, common sense will prevail, and these areas that are important for fish and wildlife habitat, hunting and fishing, and clean water will remain intact." American Forest Resource Council Public Affairs Officer Nick Smith says the roadless rule has made forests more vulnerable to insects, tree diseases, and fire. Smith said Congress never made the rule into law. In the last 25 years, it has been Forest Service policy. He said, It has undermined Congress's intent to manage federal forests and reduce risks to public lands and nearby communities. Roadless areas in Idaho's national forests are managed under a separate roadless rule than Governor Jim Risch negotiated. Lewiston Tribune website reports Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins's plan to rescind the roadless rule will not impact Idaho's separate roadless rule. A spokesperson for the USDA told the news outlet the Idaho state-specific roadless rule was part of the Administrative Procedures Act petitions and will not be affected by rescinding the 2001 roadless rule. Unlike the national roadless rule, Idaho's roadless rule allows limited logging and road building on some of Idaho's 9 million acres of roadless U.S. Forest Service land. The Idaho roadless rule continues to protect roadless areas in the state that are under consideration for wilderness protection. Seven organizations are putting on the Wellness for All event on Main Street in Moscow at this hour. The health fair is going on between 1st and 3rd Streets and is continuing until 7 p.m. KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox spoke with Wellness for All fair organizer Jessica Berman, Megan of Inland Oasis, Jasmine of Alternatives to Violence of the Palouse, and Layla Brown of the Northwest Abortion Access Fund.
Our intention here is to sort of paint a picture of the world that we want to see, where every human being has access to health care, wellness, and their human rights to health and wellness that, you know, we expect that everyone should have and everyone wants everyone in the community to have. So what we've done is we've invited organizations from around the Palouse, focused on Moscow, but we have folks from Pullman, we have folks from Boise, we have people who are statewide, who all care about ensuring that human beings and the environment are well. We have, let's see, we have folks here who are sort of Western medicine practitioners. We have Chaz here, for example. We have dentists. We have folks who are providers of healthy food, like the Moscow Food Co-op. We have masseuses. We have people who focus on sound therapy or mental health. Trying to think of some of the other groups. We have Inland Oasis, which is focused on ensuring that LGBTQ community members have access to health and wellness. We have reproductive justice health groups here, and more. I mean, we have food, we've got music, we're not going to have any speechifying. This is truly a sort of celebration of the world that we want to create together.
My name is Megan. I'm with Inland Oasis. We are a nonprofit that is based here in Moscow. We are the group that has been putting on Palouse Pride since, well, honestly, before Inland Oasis was a thing. The folks that started Inland Oasis started it because they wanted to have an official organization behind Palouse Pride, but they've been doing it since the mid-90s. Started out with just some friends having a picnic in the park, and it's blossomed into a multi-day event. We had 93 vendors last year, and over, you know, two to 3,000 people came through East City Park. It was great. We had a lot of awesome performances, and it's just really nice seeing the community come together to show support and just celebrate all the queer folks and allies that are here on the Palouse. We like doing it in the fall after school starts for all of the students that come back, because for a lot of them it is their first Pride, hopefully not their last, but we like to show them that, you know, the Palouse is a very welcoming and supportive place. On the day-to-day, we run the West Side Food Pantry. We started that, well, it was started by Kathy and Tabitha over in Safari Pearl during 2020, during the COVID lockdowns, and once we got our center opened up, they moved the pantry over, and we serve about 2,000 people a month of our, you know, locals here on the Palouse, students, adults, children, seniors, everybody. It doesn't matter your background or your circumstances. You can come in once a week and grab some good food. We are also working on completing a commercial kitchen in our center, and once that's open, we'll be able to do community meals for folks, and we'll be able to do, you know, cooking demos for those that are interested. We'll be able to record cooking demos for those that don't have time to go to a class. We'll also be able to rent the space out to folks that need a commercial kitchen, and any, you know, farmers or anybody that want to make jam out of their berries can come and use the spot for a very low price of a few jars of jam to go on the pantry shelves.
So I work as a community advocate for Alternatives to Violence. We work with domestic violence survivors, sexual assault survivors, and we offer all sorts of services, including legal advocacy, medical advocacy, safety planning, information referrals, and many more. And today we are here for the Wellness Fair event in downtown Moscow. We are here if anyone needs our help. We are available, and we also have a hotline 24/7, so we're also...
Go ahead and say a few words about Northwest Abortion Access Fund.
Yeah, so we're a nonprofit that provides financial support to people who are looking to access abortion care. These are residents of Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Alaska. If you go to our website, nwaafund.org, you can call us too at 866-692-2310. You can contact us. We will help you fund your abortion. We'll help you with 100% of your financial need. We can give you grants, and we can also help you plan travel. We can help you plan babysitting, groceries, everything you need to make this healthcare accessible.
Considering the political climate in Idaho, what is your conversation in your organization about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just makes what we do so much more important, because now people in Idaho, they've already had barriers with not having state Medicaid cover abortion, but now they don't even have local clinics to go to. So that just adds an extra layer of financial burden, time burden. You have to travel to a different state, and it makes our outreach more important. And we just want to make sure people in Idaho know that they can still access abortion. They're going to have to travel to a different state, but they can still access abortion, and we'll help you get there.
And that was Layla Brown of the Northwest Abortion Access Fund, preceded by Jasmine of Alternatives to Violence of the Palouse, Megan of Inland Oasis, and Wellness for All Fair organizer Jessica Berman. They all spoke to KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox this afternoon at the Wellness for All Fair, which is being held on Moscow's Main Street between 1st and 3rd Street until 7 p.m. tonight.
KRFP programming is sponsored by listeners like you and by Essential Art Gallery and Fine Gifts at 203 South Main Street in Moscow, showcasing high-quality art, pottery, jewelry, art glass, sculptures, scarves, textiles, wood and metal art, and fine chocolate and gifts from regional, national, and international artists. KRFP is also sponsored by
Moscow Ale House, with something for everyone in the family. You can find Moscow Ale House at 226 West 6th Street or call 208-882-BREW. That's 208-882-2739.
The Moscow City Council's Administrative Committee yesterday recommended the city approve a conceptual schematic for development of the third floor of the city-owned 1912 Center on East 3rd Street. The building is managed by the nonprofit Heart of the Arts Incorporated. Heart of the Arts has been slowly refurbishing the four-story former Moscow High School for the last two decades. They have finished the ground floor, where the Great Room is located, and the first floor, where the Fisk Room and the Arts Room are located, and the second floor, where the LeCompte Auditorium is located. Heart of the Arts Executive Director Jenny Kostroff reviewed the conceptual design for the third floor for the Administrative Committee.
This is our concept for the third floor, and I'm seeking your approval for this concept so we can continue to move this project forward. So we'll go through what we've got. This is our third floor. It's about 10,000 square feet of building, and currently it has this is a slope that comes down because the ballroom was originally designed with a theater space that sort of sat in this spot. So we have a sloped floor that was designed into the building. building, so there's nothing bad or dangerous there. It's just designed into the building. So we need to level the floor, and then in the thinking of the spaces, we've come up with four really great community additions. The culinary lab is this piece on the east end of the third floor. This would feature a beautiful farmhouse table with chairs around it so that individuals can sit and eat a meal that they have made in this community kitchen. The culinary lab would then have three workstations, and we've already even redesigned this to not have stools around it and to become a fourth working culinary kitchen, so that if someone as a chef from a restaurant comes in and wants to work in a kitchen space, this would serve the most like a kitchen space in a commercial kitchen that's a restaurant. And then we've got these nice workstations, and each workstation would have its own things like a small fridge to have needed resources right at the workstation. There would be box hooding over these so that you could have induction burners, but you could also remove those and work like dough or pasta or you name it. So really big workstations that would also allow for plating for a larger event that would use the big ballroom. So you can use it for a catering kitchen. You can use it for Moscow farmers market vendors that need to cook, and they can cook together. Whoa. And so things like that can happen. And then in the back, we'll have fridges and our scullery area. So dishwashing. And this right here is a nice tall wall that would block off this section for some sound. But remember, we've got windows all the way around this space, so it's got lots of beautiful natural light. So we will have herb plants growing in this space that can be used in the kitchen, and it's going to be really awesome. Everyone's going to want to hang out in our kitchen. They're going to want to have their friend parties and their cook-offs, and they're going to want to cater things. It's going to be so fun, and we're going to teach people how to cook, so it's going to be a good thing. And hopefully, eventually, partnerships with the school district, you name it. So it's going to be a nice, versatile space that has lots of different capacities for it. Elevator already goes to the third floor, but then we would be adding, this has actually now been repurposed to go inside the bathroom. We keep tweaking stuff. So this, you know, this is a moment in time that we shared with you, and now we're still messing with it. But a nice big bathroom in here that would also have in this closet would be our mechanical, like electrical panels and a janitor sink. And there was something else fun that we were putting. Oh, our grease trap. We got to have a grease trap because we got a kitchen over here and we're going to drain out the floors and stuff. You got to make sure you catch all the grease. And we don't put grease down the drain, in case anyone wants to know. But anyhow, so, but we'll have one there to trap it. This area would have nice glass windows. So you'll come up the stairs and it'll have a little stairwell there that will, but the glass, the windows will let you see into these spaces, which is really nice, but then close it off for sound or close it off for cooking noises. And for safety, the fire doors at the top. So then we've got our big, beautiful ballroom. One of the things that's in our lease agreement is to honor that integrity of the larger space on the top floor to keep it a big, unique space. And it's gorgeous. It's got vaulted ceilings and skylights. All these boxes that you see on the plan are skylights that light up all the way to the roof, which is fantastic. Huge amounts of light in that space. It's absolutely gorgeous. And we're going to put benches along each side of the room so that there's automatic purse dump points for people that are setting up in the space, because we all know that everyone that carries anything wants to set it down not on the floor, but not on the table that you're setting up. So you want to kind of put it on a bench. So we've got benches along those walls, and we'll have heating and cooling coming underneath the benches so that it's at people height, which is really nice. And then we'll also have additional cooling that would happen across the room to help create good cross breezes. Meanwhile, all these windows open, so we have lots of beautiful fresh air that can come into that space. Again, a little sort of anteroom arrival point that would have glass windows here so that you can close it off for sound. But remembering, this is your only elevator to the third floor, so access across the space will be an important part of the equation. And we will be talking to anyone that rents the ballroom to make sure they know anyone that needs access to the east wing, sorry, the west wing, this is east, the west wing of the building would have that ability to come across the room. Good storage for tables and chairs, and also dishware. We're actually talking about putting a little hutch here to have dishes in between the kitchen and the ballroom space so that we would have all those beautiful Han rental dishes put into a nice china cabinet. yay, that it's like right there. Bathrooms on this side. So we'll have individual use bathrooms so that everyone has their own private space to use a bathroom, which I think just creates dignity among everybody. So there you go. And then this side of the facility will have two fun rooms. The studio space, which is going to be a space that has this little nook. You would walk into this space here that has the benches, and you can dump your things and do a yoga class in there, or you could do a Tai Chi class in there. It'll have wood floors that it already does have. They're from 1912. Lots of beautiful light, but then a nice solid wall along that side, so that if you were doing those handstands, you want to kick against a wall. People always love doing that, so that's important. But the studio space, again, thinking about who would use a studio space, people who are able to climb all the sets of stairs to come to the third floor, that's great. So then we put the studio on the third floor. The Sky Lounge is an incredible view of Moscow. So all these windows look out over Moscow, down across over to campus. You can see the Hello Walk during the winter when the trees aren't all full, so you can see all the way to U of I. Really important that we have that space available to the whole community to use. So creating a lounge space that people could rent to have gatherings of friends and just sort of informal, fun evenings. Or if you wanted to have a dinner, that you would use tables in the studio and then come across the Sky Lounge to relax afterwards and just sit around and talk. But the beautiful part in looking out and seeing all of Moscow is it reminds us of why the 1912 Center exists in the first place, because it was built as the high school to be a place for professors who are moving to town because of U of I's students to finish high school to go on to college. So having that view out across to the campus is really important to remember where we've come from. So that lounge will be just a gorgeous place, and anyone can rent it, and it'll be a real reasonable $25 an hour, hopefully still, when we get it up and running.
That was Heart of the Arts Executive Director Jenny Kostroff speaking to the Moscow City Council's Administrative Committee yesterday about the proposed conceptual design for the third floor of the city-owned 1912 building. The Administrative Committee put approval of the conceptual design on the consent agenda for the next full City Council meeting, scheduled for July 7th.
AARP Oregon has opened up nominations for its prestigious award for volunteerism. For the Andrus Award for Community Service, the organization will select a person or couple age 50 or older performing services without pay in their communities. Geneva Craig won the award in 2019 for her work organizing educational sessions for her community around Medford in Southern Oregon. She says as a child, her mother taught her to volunteer by supporting their sick neighbors.
So there's no age group where you can say, oh, I don't have a skill, I don't have a talent. You have something to offer, if only to give some support and let somebody know you care.
Oregonians do a lot of volunteering. Data from 2023 shows that nearly 36% of Oregonians formally volunteered through organizations, about 8 points higher than the national average. Research shows volunteering helps counteract the effects of stress, anxiety, and depression while making people feel more connected and happier. Craig says it is important that volunteers inspire others.
I'm happy because I'm seeing the rise in people who are stepping back out and offering to volunteer. And I try to let them know, we're not going to work you to death. Okay? This is teamwork.
The deadline for the Andrus Award nominations is September 1st. The winner receives $1,000 to donate to a nonprofit of their choosing. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
The Trump administration has failed to release money to fund the College Assistant Migrant Program, also known as CAMP, that was already allocated for colleges in Washington. The federal government would normally release the money by now for the program to help the sons and daughters of migrant workers attend college. There is also a provision in the U.S. Senate bill, the reconciliation bill, also called the Big Beautiful Bill, that would eliminate the CAMP program entirely. The U.S. Department of Education has not yet released the grant award notifications, even though the federal government's 2026 fiscal year is set to begin next week. Washington State University Migrant Education Director Michael Heim told the Spokesman Review, colleges must secure continuation funding each year to operate. Heim said WSU has 43 students set to participate in camp this fall, and each would receive $1,000 scholarships for their first year of college, as well as assistance from university staff. Eastern Washington University Camp Program Director Rocio Rangel said federal officials have told him they may not receive their already allocated money for the program until September. Rangel told the Spokesman Review that's a 90-day gap of not knowing what will happen to being able to serve our students the way that we typically would. Rangel said 40 students have confirmed they would participate in camp this coming year, and each would get a $500 per quarter scholarship. Rangel said Eastern is in a more secure position than WSU because a private $425,000 grant has matched their annual federal allocation for camp. Federal Judge James E. Gookey ruled a 35-year-old Washington immigrant who came from Mexico before he was 2 years old must stay in jail because he ran from a group of federal immigration agents across his own yard to his house before they tackled him. More than 50 people protested outside the courthouse in Spokane, calling for the release of Martin R. Diaz on Monday. The defense attorney for Diaz, Carter Powers Beggs, told Judge Gookey, "There is not enough evidence that Diaz would be a danger to society if released." The Spokesman Review previously published Ring camera video and another surveillance camera video of Diaz as he arrived at his home and noticed three unmarked cars pulling up. He sprinted towards a fenced-in backyard area as the agents caught up and tackled him. Prosecutors charged Diaz with felony assault on a law enforcement officer. An affidavit by U.S. Border Patrol agent Walter Sketch claimed he activated his emergency lights as he drove up to Diaz's home, but the Ring camera shows the vehicles without emergency lights on as they drove up. Sketch said Diaz swung his elbow back into the face of one of the agents, although the surveillance camera video does not show that, although all of the action is not in the frame. According to the Spokesman Review, Gookey said all the other agents on the scene did not see Gookey strike anyone in the face as he was being tackled, and Agent Sketch, who may have lied about turning on his vehicle's emergency lights, is the only agent on the scene who testified about that. Sketch said Diaz swung his elbow back and hit him in the eye, and he experienced bruising and swelling around one of his eyes. Judge Gookey noted another agent on the scene, quote, observed Diaz throwing elbows, unquote, until agents sprayed Diaz with a chemical agent. Sketch also wrote in court records the clothing of the agents had letters indicating they were law enforcement, but none of that is visible in the video. Diaz came to the U.S. with his family when he was 1 year old and has letters from Mexican government officials saying the family had been targeted for extermination and torture by gangs in southern Mexico where they lived. Beggs said of the chase and tackling at Diaz's home, "There was a lot going on and a lot of opportunity for someone to get hit, and that evidence of Diaz assaulting an officer is murky at best." He argued none of his client's actions were malicious in nature. Beggs also argued because Diaz is still fighting to stay in the U.S., he would show up at all of his court hearings. Judge Gookey said if he released Diaz, immigration would just pick him up anyway because of his immigration status. Diaz has been trying to obtain U.S. citizenship for much of his life. He has a previous felony assault conviction from the early 2000s involving a fight with his father-in-law. Family and friends wrote to the court saying Diaz has hired people out of recovery programs for his construction firm, plays with their children, and is a loyal friend. U.S. Attorney Michael Ellis said Diaz has run from immigration officials in the past and has a history of violence. Judge Gokey ruled against releasing Diaz, meaning he will probably stay in jail until his trial in October. He said, "I think there is a danger. Reopening an immigration case does not give him the right to fight with an immigration officer. I understand he wants to stay in the U.S., but physical force is not a right afforded under the Constitution." The Party of Socialism and Liberation in Spokane organized the protest on the steps of the courthouse. The group's media liaison, Ari Dean, said agents should not take neighbors of Spokaneites without protest. Diaz's wife, Kendall Diaz, who was born in the U.S., told reporters outside the courthouse, "Just knowing that this many people who don't know him are here to support us and say, like, we stand with you, that's a really big deal to my family and I. That means a lot. It's also a lot to know that he doesn't get to come out and see this. I really want him to experience the support that we have in our community." Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, it will be increasing clouds tonight, low 54, cloudy through mid-morning tomorrow, then gradual clearing, high 80, partly cloudy, low 50 Wednesday night, west winds 5 to 10, gusts up to 20, and mostly sunny Thursday, high 75, mostly cloudy, low 48 Thursday night, mostly sunny Friday, high 74, currently 81 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option, and there's a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Brenda Cox assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is made possible in part by support from KRFP members and
John's Alley Tavern, Moscow's home of live music. John's Alley is located at 114 East 6th Street in downtown Moscow.
Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Friends of the Clearwater, a 501c3 environmental nonprofit dedicated to protecting your public lands. FOC is defending the wildlands, wildlife, and waterways of North Central Idaho for future generations. Friendsoftheclearwater.org.
KRFP, Moscow is the best in the USA. Yeah.